Welcome to AM Best Audio.
Low adoption and awareness of disability insurance highlight a major protection gap and a clear opportunity for insurers. Most consumers say they'd rely on savings if they couldn't work, while few turn to coverage. As interest in income protection grows among employers and employees, insurers have a key role to play in boosting education and closing the gap before it leads to greater financial risk. I'm Lori Chortis for AM Best Audio, and joining us now to discuss that is Kimberly Landry, Associate Research Director of Workplace Benefits Research at LIMRA and LOMA. Kim, welcome. It's wonderful to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Lori. I'm happy to be here.
Kim, what do the findings from the 2025 Insurance Barometer and 2025 BEAT study reveal about how financially unprepared many consumers are for a disabling event?
Yeah, so according to our 2025 barometer study, more than half of consumers say they'd have to rely on personal savings if the primary wage earner in their household became disabled or unable to work due to illness or injury. Another 32% would turn to family members for financial help. Over a quarter would turn to their retirement accounts, which would be likely to incur penalties and would also have a negative impact on their retirement readiness. 21% would rely on credit cards or loans, which exposes them to high interest rates, obviously, and only 21% would turn to employer-sponsored disability insurance. We also know from the Council for Disability Income Awareness that nearly 4 in 10 American adults said they couldn't pay an unexpected $400 bill without having to carry a balance on a credit card or borrow money. And 78% of consumer bankruptcy filings cited income loss as a contributor to the bankruptcy. That included 44% that specifically cited medical-related work loss as a contributing factor.
And what do these findings mean for insurers?
It means that there's a big need for these products, this disability coverage, and our industry really needs to do a better job of educating workers about this need and help them to be more prepared for it. So our BEAT research shows that awareness of disability benefits is very low. More than 10% of employees tell us they're not sure whether their employer even offers STD or LTD benefits, and more than 40% are uncertain. And by uncertain, we mean they can't answer the question with confidence. They say, oh, I think we have it, or I don't think so, or I'm not quite sure. They cannot answer definitively. We also see that understanding of disability benefits is low. Only 46 to 47% of employees feel like they understand their long-term disability and short-term disability benefits well, if they have them. And if anything, we think they're overestimating how well they understand, because we've done research in the past where we've actually quizzed workers on sort of like the very basic features of some of these products, including disability insurance, and their scores tend to be abysmal. They do very badly on those quizzes. But what's happening is so much time and attention gets taken up by medical coverage during open enrollment, so employees often have trouble absorbing information about all the other benefits. Everything gets thrown at them at once, and they can't, you know, they're preoccupied with the medical plan, and they don't pay as much attention, or they can't, they kind of shut down after a while. And we know that sometimes employers don't even communicate about disability benefits every year, especially if the coverage is employer paid or there's not an annual open enrollment opportunity. They don't say anything about it at all sometimes. So it's, you can understand why employees tend to not be aware of it. So, you know, employers and benefit providers and carriers need to help employees understand, first of all, what the coverage is, two, what it's there for, and number three, why they need it.
Well, expanding on that awareness and education, how can we better help employers educate workers about income protection?
So some communication best practices that come up time and again in our research include, first of all, communicating about benefits throughout the year. Half of all workers tell us that their employer only communicates with them about benefits during the open enrollment period, but 73% say they would prefer to receive benefits communication either a few times or frequently throughout the course of the year. And that's especially true for younger employees. We find often express a greater desire for more communication and more types of benefits education because they don't know these products as well. They haven't had as many years of experience with them as, you know, someone that's been, you know, going through open enrollment, you know, 20 years in a row, right? Another best practice is to communicate through multiple channels. So we know that people have different learning styles, different ways of absorbing information, and there isn't any one communication method that everyone is going to look at. So our research has found that the more different types of educational resources an employer provides, the higher employees' benefit understanding tends to be. We also suggest providing personalized recommendations whenever possible. We know that employees often want help understanding which benefits are right for them and what level of coverage makes sense for their personal situation. So decision support tools can help with that. In-person meetings can help. And our BEAT research found that these were some of the most helpful types of benefit communication employees receive. They really want that personal touch. You know, they don't mind the digital communication. They want to enroll online, but they want a way to ask questions and to get guidance. And finally, use storytelling. We found that providing relatable examples of how the coverage can help real people goes a long way towards helping employees understand it. We did a message testing study a few years ago where employees who saw personal examples of how a real person might use disability insurance developed much more favorable attitudes toward the product.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
Kim, what are some of the most common reasons that employees give for dropping their disability insurance, and how can those concerns be addressed?
Sure. So when employees have disability insurance and then choose to drop it, to opt out in a future year, one of the most common reasons they cite is cost issues. So they either say it was because of the cost of the benefit went up or because they wanted to reduce their spending on benefits in general. We know workers are very price sensitive and that medical coverage eats up a huge chunk of their budget that they're willing to pay for benefits. The median they want to spend out of pocket on benefits is about $150 per month, and medical premiums take up most or all of that depending on the type of coverage they have. Plus all of the high inflation we've had in the U.S. in recent years has also driven up their overall cost of living. So we need to help employees recognize the value of the coverage so they understand why it's worth paying for. We also see employees dropping coverage because they said that they didn't use the benefit enough to be worth it. And now keep in mind, this is a type of insurance that people really don't want to use. You know, nobody wants to become disabled and have to make a claim on this. But because they're not using it, it's hard to keep it in their head and like drive the point home of why it's important to have it, even though they're not using it. So we need to help them understand that importance and that value. Another strategy that sometimes works for this objection is to attach value-added services to the coverage so that there's some sort of benefit there their employees will be likely to use, even if they don't use the main sort of disability income protection. So things like employee assistance programs or financial wellness offerings and that type of thing that you can tack on.
Why is disability insurance often overlooked compared to other types of coverage? And what's the biggest misconception that people have about income protection?
Well, it's often overlooked because employees are distracted by other benefits, they don't understand it, and they underestimate the likelihood of needing it. And the most common misconception, I'd say, is just that people don't think it's going to happen to them. The Social Security Administration predicts that 1 in 4 of today's 20-year-olds will become disabled at some point during their working years, but people tend to think the odds are much lower than that. We once asked employees to estimate the risk that they would personally become disabled and unable to work for at least 6 months at some point in their lifetime, and most of them put the odds at 10% or less. Employees also tend to overestimate the percent of disabling events that are work-related. It's actually less than 5%. But because they think it's more, they often think that they can rely on workers' compensation to cover them if something were to happen to them, while in reality, it just won't apply to most disability situations.
Kim, looking ahead, what trends do you see shaping the future of disability insurance over the next 3 to 5 years?
Sure, I'll give you a few. First of all, due to overall benefit cost increases, and especially premium increases on health insurance plans, we think we can expect to see some employers pulling back on their funding for disability benefits and shifting more costs to the employees. So, you know, either moving toward more voluntary plans or different levels of contributory plans. Employers might also look to make disability benefits less rich to try to keep costs down. Another key trend we're looking at is claims integration. We see a lot of interest in the industry in connecting claims across different benefit lines, such as disability with supplemental health insurance, so that when a leave request comes in and the employee also has other coverages with the same insurer, that carrier can look at it and say, oh, you had a baby. You should also get a payout from your hospital indemnity plan. Or, look, you're out because you're recovering from an accident. There's an accident claim that also should have been filed, and initiate that process automatically to make things really easy for the employee. We're also seeing new riders and plan features being introduced to support things like caregiving needs, mental health, recovery support for specific medical conditions, financial wellness, and so on. Absence management is a major trend. As employers expand the number and types of leaves that they're providing, there's growing demand for comprehensive absence and leave management services, either from insurance carriers or other third parties. Some of our recent employer research found that when selecting a new disability carrier, about 2/3 of mid-size and large employers would be willing to pay more for a disability product that included an integrated absence management program. And a lot of carriers, of course, if they offer both of these, are selling leave management services alongside disability, and they're seeing demand for disability plans that better integrate with these solutions. And the last trend I'll mention is like paid family medical leave, and especially the state mandated PFML programs. Carriers are watching what impact this might have on short-term disability plans. Insurers were actually bracing for a big negative impact when the first states started implementing these programs. But so far, that hasn't really seemed to materialize that much. We might see some changes in plan design, but we're not seeing like a drastic impact on sales. And it seems like right now we might be seeing a slowdown in new states moving to implement these programs. But if that changes, or if there were to be some type of action at the federal level, obviously that could have an impact on disability plans.
Kim, this has been so interesting, so informative. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
That was Kimberly Landry, Associate Research Director of Workplace Benefits Research at LIMRA and LOMA. For AM Best Audio, I'm Lori Chortis.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.